This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Real estate developers have long used scale models, drawings, and photorealistic visuals to help market their projects. But a massive new urban development in downtown Tampa kicks things up several notches to help lease everything from condos to office space. The Marketing Center for the Water Street development is selling a $3.5 billion project that covers 56 acres of prime West Coast Florida property. When prospective buyers walk in, the lights come up on a presentation that blends projection mapping, visualized real-time data, and interactive digital signage. The centerpiece is an elevated table that has some 450 3D printed scale model buildings, very specifically illuminated by a halo of a dozen laser projectors. Instead of salespeople walking clients through the space and then heading to a meeting room to talk details, a custom iPad app controls what people see on the model, all drawn from real-time data sets. I spent time recently speaking with Devin and Caitlin Wombolt, the DNC, I assume, in DC Bolt, the solutions provider that did the projection mapping. They were joined by Dorian V. of Immersa, which developed the custom management platform, which sits on top of 3D gaming technology. All right, so I have three of you on a podcast. I don't know that I've done that in the past. We've got folks from DC Bolt and Dorian from Immersa. DC Bolt, Caitlin and Devin, can you tell me a bit about the company background and how you got to where you are now in terms of what you're doing?
Sure thing. So back in 2012, we started DC Bolt. Devin and I were actually in Chicago. We were both going to 3D animation school. 3D animators, nerds, met in a classroom. From that point, we did our first project. We started DC Bolt, did our first project, which was a nightclub in Chicago, where we designed a custom projection mapped stage. We did custom LED all throughout the nightclub. And from that point on, we were like, we're hooked. Projection mapping was our baby. And we started getting into more of the custom content aspects of immersive design. Then we slowly found ourselves in Orlando, which is currently where we're based, where we're working with the parks, you know, doing a lot of custom animation, immersive media, things like that. And the rest is history.
Yeah. And this is Devin from DC Bolt. Just to piggyback on that a little bit, my personal history and experience and background leading up to the 3D animation school was working for and with a couple of really key large AV integrators up in the Northeast region. So I essentially was getting my schooling on the world of AV and how systems worked, how to design them on a hardware level, the infrastructure requirements, how to run large projects. At the same time, I was using that knowledge and experience to pay for the schooling needed to do the graphic element, learn the programs, learn the 3D world. And then around, 2010, 2011 is when projection mapping kind of just started on the radar of people who were kind of familiar with both worlds of how projectors work, how to use them, and also how to make some custom graphics. We're able to start connecting dots, and we started seeing some really, really cool and interesting one-of-a-kind projects cropping up, on the internet and the YouTube. And I had actually just moved to Chicago. I was freshly in, my second apartment maybe. I had a bunch of boxes left over, and I was either going to have to break the boxes down and throw them out, or I had just seen this really, really cool, it was actually a facade of a cityscape projected onto these boxes. Now I forget exactly what the advertisement once was, but it was an advertisement for something. And I remember, being very just wowed and in awe of this amazing video that I just witnessed on YouTube. And this is back before they had advertisements, this is back in the day. And so I took the boxes that I had in my living room and I stacked them up in my apartment and I covered them in white paper. And I made my very first attempt at 3D projection mapping, just using Photoshop and a projector that I happened to have left over from a project. One thing led to another. And before we knew it,
we were creating content for those boxes.
We were using that project I brought that project to the school and we started using it for all the different students to make content for. And it was just like a fun new thing, a new medium that people hadn't experienced yet. So one thing led to another. We ended up doing a couple nightclubs, made a bunch of videos, and then eventually made our way down to Florida to help work on Harry Potter World.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that technical background is really, really important. I have run into motion graphic designers who have found their way into digital signage-ish projects. And they're obviously very good at the creative side of things, but they were just completely lost in the woods when it came to some of the technical things. And particularly going back 9-10 years to the early days of projection mapping, it was really super complicated then.
Absolutely.
And if you didn't know what you were doing, you'd be total deer in the headlights.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was trial and error, and there wasn't a lot of tutorials or people out there to reach out to or resources for help. So
no point clouds.
But that was the fun of it, really. You know, it was raw, and then shortly thereafter, more and more software started becoming available to help with mesh warping and alignment tools and different things like that, which essentially evolved to the point where we were able to do something like we did in Tampa Bay with Dorian and his team. So. Just the brief answer to your question as a background to DC Bolt, we've really found ourselves in the niche where we speak the language and can really speak to and understand all of the things that a content media team needs to know in order to do their jobs. But we also speak the language and understand all the variables and different aspects involved with the infrastructure that comes along with making these systems. A lot of people, go and do a show or go and do an event and it has to be up and running for 6-12 hours and then they can break it down and it goes. When we design a system, we want it to be running 6-12 hours a day for up to 10 years. So there's a lot of different variables and redundancies and different things that we take into account as far as what brands that we choose to use and what kind of equipment we choose to use, what's doing the video processing, the routing, the power backups, remote control, all of that comes into play. And then we can also relate all of those technical details to a media team or to someone like Dorian's team, who has an amazing team of programmers, and they know everything they need to know about the video game world. And we were able to converse with them and go back and forth and figure out the common ground of how to get them what they need to get us what we need so we can project on this city.
Right. And I would imagine that while you could probably get some gigs here and there in Chicago, if you want steady work with substantial budgets, you really ought to be in a place like Orlando or maybe Las Vegas, something like that, where these are the kinds of shows that, as you said, may run for 10 years as opposed to one night for a brand launch or something.
Most definitely.
And never to take away from those. There's just as much, work and effort and talent goes into creating those productions.
Sure.
It's just from our niche standpoint, we really specialize in installations and things that are meant to be permanently installed, at least, or semi-permanently installed and used on a regular basis. We go for bulletproof design. So
right.
That's kind of where we set ourselves apart from most other companies that are similar to us.
We have the experience of the live show world, but we definitely prefer the permanent installation world.
The integration.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So Dorian, tell me about your company.
Hi, I'm Dorian V. I'm a co-founder and CTO of Immersa. Immersa is an experiential software company with our primary focus is in the real estate and real estate development world. And our roots actually grew out of an architecture firm. We, in addition to Immersa, we also have a design firm that's based in Sarasota, Florida, that's been around 30 plus years and does a wide range of work, everything from master planning through complex urban mixed use stuff. And what happened was, a little shy of 10 years ago, we started to look towards interactive real-time 3D tech to really change the decision-making process internally. And so we started writing our own software on top of game engines to go through any level of decision you can think of, whether it's, you know, entitlements and approval decisions or finish selections and things like that. And then we started pulling in all sorts of different data and being able to visualize data in these yet to be physically built environments, everything in the game engine. And what happened was, our clients started dragging their potential buyers into our office and ultimately selling million-dollar residences out of our workroom, which is, as you can imagine, by no means a residential sales center. And it happened enough times that we realized there's obviously something there for sales and marketing, and we set out to build out this platform for both real estate developers, but also real estate marketing. And actually, Devin and I met several years ago. We were introduced through a mutual friend in Boston, and he introduced me to Devin, and we had in mind for one of our architecture projects this badass projection mapped experience for this interior courtyard of this building. And we brought Devin down to consult on it and see how we could do it. Unfortunately, the client ultimately wound up not doing it. But what was interesting on the Tampa project, Devin was approached by strategic property partners to consult. And at the same time, they had approached us for our experiential tech to help them through development decisions. And then when the RFP finally went out, we realized Devin was consulting on it, and gave him a call and said, why don't we team up for this? And this is just a slam dunk. If we mix what you're doing with what we're doing, it'll be something that's never been done before.
All right. So you guys have referenced the Tampa project. So can you give me the skinny on what that was all about, and it's up and running now, correct?
That is correct. Sure. So the Tampa project is marketing center. It is the marketing center for a multi-billion-dollar real estate development in downtown Tampa, Florida. It is the development itself consists of about 56 acres of privately owned real estate downtown. And the head of the company that's doing it is Strategic Property Partners, which one of the major partners is Jeff Vinnick, who is the owner of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And their marketing team had seen some cool projection mapped city stuff done in other cities worldwide, and they had this idea of hey, we want to do something similar to that, but hey, wouldn't it be cool if we could actually just show all of these data sets in real time, whether that be market data, real estate market data, whether that be demographic data, or even traffic data, things like that. And there was nothing like that had been done before in a projection mapping scenario. These were things that we were doing with our technology, just on the game engine side of things. And they wanted to make this the centerpiece of their marketing center. So the concept was that we would 3D print a 16-foot diameter scale model of downtown Tampa, put in all of the buildings that they're currently designing, build it modularly so that as their second and third phases get designed, we could then easily replace those buildings. But then projection map all of this information and data and color and content onto that scale model, while at the same time showing related content on the surrounding video walls to that scale model.
Mm-hmm. You know, we did about a 3-month discovery process with SPP directly just to help define and isolate and determine, you know, what is the map boundary going to be? What section of Tampa is going to be, you know, even just to determine whether it was going to be a square versus a circle, you know, how large is this model going to be in the physical room? And then we worked with them and the architects to work backwards from the physical restrictions of the size and height of the ceilings in the room to essentially design a system and find all the proper lensing that we knew would be able to cover this entire model and all of its intricate little surfaces from 360 degrees, because their goal was to have people to walk all the way around this model without mitigating as much shadow casting as possible. So we went through a 3-month process discovery process for that, and essentially determined the best approach and the most efficient approach for covering the surfaces from all the different angles with the least amount of projectors needed, but enough to do what we enough to give us the level of detail that we needed, while also doing the best to mitigate as many shadows as possible.
Right. And it's a fine level of detail that we're projecting.
There's a very fine balance between number of projectors, distance of image throws, lensing selections, and then how we kind of use the mapping software to merge that entire world together from the game engine, which Dorian's team worked on. And then we actually developed some custom bits of software to make the game engine talk directly to the projector mapping software.
One of the other interesting things was that most projection mapped experiences, at least that I've seen, are meant to be viewed at a distance, at least, you know, 10 feet away. Whereas this is a table that, you know, sometimes upwards a room full of 50 people are surrounding and are directly on top of and looking at, which because of that, it had to be very, very fine detail on these models.
The modular construction of this is really fascinating to me as well, because obviously this is a development, you know, things are changing. There are phases that are already, you know, on the docket that we're talking about. Lots of changes. So down to the building, the individual building construction, that was a huge criterion for the client, and, you know, down to the table being modular. So everything is really designed with room for growth. With room for those changes that we foresee.
Which ties right back into us. We really like doing projects that have a 5 to 10 year shelf life. And we enjoy the challenges that are brought forth by making sure we're designing with the future in mind, you know? So as the city evolves and develops physically out, you know, you look out the window, you see a new building. Well, we are prepared with Immersa to completely update everything, both digitally and physically, when it comes to the scale model as well.
Yeah, right. And that's one of the super cool things about real-time rendering, and what really gets me excited about it is if this were to be done, you know, with traditional, you know, offline rendering and traditional media capabilities, that would have meant if one of those buildings gets redesigned, which will inevitably happen, all of that content would have had to have been re-rendered and then, you know, of course paid for, and that would have gotten just extremely pricey. And being able to do this and push all of this content in real time at runtime was just such an enormous cost savings to the client than what other traditional media companies were proposing.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So when I've seen scale models of new developments, and admittedly, I've not had a lot of cause to see many of them, but you know, in my travels, I have bumped into them. They would most typically just be as described, a scale model of a set of buildings, maybe nested in a larger urban area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can look at it from different angles and see the ones that are colored differently and the other ones are kind of beige or whatever. So, you know, these are the new buildings. What is it with the property developers who said, that's not enough, we need to do more than this to actively sell it? Is it about sizzle or...
It's about telling a story and showing data and showing how Tampa as a city is growing and the movements of people and where millennials are settling and what nearby building performances, how nearby buildings are performing over time, both like from a rent perspective, but also like an occupancy perspective. And like one of the things that I found pretty interesting, and that was a total surprise to me on the data side of things, is once we started pulling in these data feeds, and we could then visualize them, in a 3D form, not in tabular, Excel sheets and that sort of thing, you started to see things that you wouldn't necessarily have expected. Like naturally, I would have expected that the buildings along the waterfront would have had a higher rent growth year over year. But then when we visualize it on the table, you could see that it's not. It's the buildings that are in the downtown core that are actually having higher rent growth. And that's something that you absolutely couldn't do with the traditional scale model. Right. And that was critical for them to be able to get the high priced rents they're looking for.
Right. So when you're doing a sales presentation in a more typical marketing center, you would take the prospective tenants into this area and show them the scale model and show them some elevations and everything else, and then go to a meeting room and then run the Excel spreadsheets or PowerPoint decks that show all the different data components that you want to pitch, versus this where I guess you could do the whole meeting just around the scale model, right?
Yeah. So one of the really great benefits of having the entire model, basically the entire section of the city that's being discussed in this gaming environment, as well as, you know, this live, as close as we can get to an actual hologram going on in front of them, is we've also been able to cater very special presentations and different storytelling modes depending on who the viewer is. So if it's a sales meeting versus if it's to someone who wants to, maybe is interested in buying a condo or something at this top level of the new addition building, versus someone like who owns the stadium right there, and they want to see how Coca-Cola comes in, and they want to know, how is my branding going to look on the city? Well, the Immersa platform, we can upload a Coca-Cola logo, and then they can visualize it on the model in front of them in all the renderings. Everything happens in real time. So depending on who the viewer is, we have many different modes that the presenter can go through to tell the story. And they also have the ability to kind of shoot from the hip. If something comes up, they can point at a building on a map and it will highlight directly on the, on the model in front of them. They can drop the viewers almost anywhere and show them the view at certain times of day, and stuff that you just couldn't do in any other kind of working environment.
Right. Isolating floor levels too, and giving them that first person perspective of what it's going to be like to live in this building, or, what they're going to see. It's huge. It makes for a really compelling sales tool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we have just been talking about the super cool part, which is the scale model. But as part of the overall deliverable, there are also two touchscreens and touchscreen kiosks that users could navigate this future version of Tampa themselves, also in the room. But just like Devin and Caitlin were saying, it's a incredibly flexible tool for storytelling. And they do have different teams. They've got a commercial team. That's all they care about. Just, you know, their focus is commercial leasing. And then they have different real estate agencies that are interested in selling different residences. Mm-hmm. And then they've got a whole advertising team, because obviously the stadium is right there. And we wrote a system that allows them to basically take a package of assets, of billboards, of digital signage, actual video MP4 files, and drop that into the content management system. And what it will do is it will automatically ingest all of that all of those assets and apply them to, like Devin had mentioned, every specific billboard, where it's supposed to go, and suck in all of those video assets and do it all on the fly.
And is control just off a tablet?
It is. It's off of a custom iPad controller that was written for the project.
So who manages the day-to-day for, obviously you've mapped the data tables and everything, so that's okay. But when, as you described, you want to put in assets from Coca-Cola or whatever. Is that a managed service that you guys or one of your companies does, or is that are the people at the real estate development company doing that?
We built a whole content management system that they mm-hmm. can themselves upload new content. They can create their own tours where they can say, okay, I want to play this content first, then I want to see this on the table, then I want to see these videos on the screens. So they can arrange all of that themselves. We haven't quite turned that over to them yet. We're still the gatekeepers on it mm-hmm. for the first few months, but once everything's totally solidified, we'll turn that over to them, and they're off and running on their own.
And on the system side, we also, so Dorian has built in a whole content management system, and we've also built in a bunch of presets on the programming of the actual infrastructure. So they can choose lighting presets, audio presets. There's some underlighting under the table. They have control of that. So they can really choose and select any specific presets they want that ties back into the video game engine. So when they choose, you know, one thing, all, you know, everything in the room is going to react to it. The lights go down, you know, the sound comes on, all the AV system itself integrates seamlessly with it.
Yeah. Like for instance, they can, when they are talking about the parks and nearby parks, the soft underlighting glow of the table can turn green, and you can hear birds chirping in the audio. And it's you know, very, very mm-hmm. subtle, but definitely very effective things, creating that overall immersion and experience.
So how do they know, how does your client measure that this is working and that the investment in time and money that they put into this
when you
is
see
doing a better job?
When you see 50 people enter the room and the system's off, it's so cool. The system's off, everyone comes in, they all surround it, they're all milling about, everyone's seen a scale model before, and then the sales director hits the on button. And the lights go dark, and that system goes on, and 50 people at once go "Whoa!" and start whipping out their phones. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty good proof of concept for them.
Yeah, there. But that sure, but there's a CFO in that company who's going to be saying, "Okay, that's all very nice. I'm glad people are excited, but is this selling more real estate for me?"
Yeah, I mean, that is something that will get uncovered over time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, tools like this are are going to be required in the near future. That's exactly what Immersa as a company, why it was created. The need to explain projects more in depth and the time of just being able to sell off a plan is gone. People expect to be able to experience the future, and this project is that on a whole nother level.
Now, 6 months ago, pre-pandemic, people would have looked at this and went, okay, this is the future. This is how commercial real estate is going to be sold. But then pandemic hit, huge swaths of the population started working from home, and companies started announcing, we're just going to let people work from home forever now. And commercial property groups started thinking, oh, dear God, our leasing rates are going to drop to the floor. So how does this fit into the quote unquote new normal?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of that going on. It's been pretty interesting on the real estate market to see how the pandemic has affected it. Interestingly, like in the housing market, actually picked up traction, at least in Florida. The commercial leasing side, it's not so much that anything has slowed down at all. They're just rethinking like how you design, elevators and how you design communal areas. I don't think, at least not yet, we have not seen from our side any bit of slowdown, really, even on the investment side. We've since COVID hit, we've landed 6 new projects, and that surprisingly, we totally expected it to slow down, but if anything, it's picked up. It was absolutely unfortunate for the SPP guys that the month after this, amazing marketing center opened, COVID hit, and they were forced to shut it down. But they are open again, and they're starting to give presentations again, and fortunately, because a lot of these tools were written in software, they can, during that couple month period where they were down, they could give remote presentations to people that couldn't be there in the marketing center. They could still see the content, they just couldn't see it in person.
Right.
Go ahead, Kaylin.
I was just going to say, yeah, if nothing else, this pandemic has just given so many people all the time they needed to be more creative and more expressive and, creating more immersive experiences that will really sell the idea. So I feel like, just like Immersa, DC Bolt really hasn't slowed down. And now we're seeing, even more interest because people have more time to really put more thought into solutions like these. So just piggybacking off of what Dorian said, I think, this, if nothing else, the time has been really helpful for a lot of companies to think up more creative solutions.
To be completely honest, having the little break in time actually gave us the time we needed to get a breather. We were pedal to the metal to get the Tampa project done on the timeline we had, and we feel so blessed that we had actually had it done and launched before the COVID.
Which was a ridiculous timeline, by the way.
Yeah, the turnaround on that project was absurd. We had, I forget the total number of 3D printers, but at one point we had over 200 3D printers going at the same time at 4 different locations across the country.
It was a scramble, but it was worth it.
So after, it was kind of, it's been a breath, like a nice breath of fresh air for us. We certainly have many things coming out of this, and it doesn't feel like it's slowed down, but I'm scared to think of how fast we'd be going right now without the COVID pumping of the brakes. So I'm just looking for the silver lining, but I feel like, everything's going to pick back up. I don't think that, that this is going to be a permanent new world that we're living in. And people are always going to want to continue to develop real estate and come up with new marketing centers and new ways of conveying new ideas. Just by that short pre-COVID 1 month that we had, we saw so many people get excited in ways that they haven't had, been excited before about real estate. And visualizing data, even, you know, a lot of times these are boring conversations that people have in conference rooms, you know, looking at spreadsheets, and now they're standing around them actually getting excited about a boring topic like, you know, restaurant revenues and things like that, that normally people don't care to even discuss, but now they can visualize it. And they can say, oh, that's where my friend lives down that street. There's a great restaurant. There's, we need, you know, new way of footpath there. And you just kind of, you know, it's literally stepping outside of the box, gaining a new perspective on, in this case, the entire city and all the people who are city planning, making big decisions. You know, it gives them the opportunity to kind of look at it from a different perspective, literally walk all the way around it if they want to, and discuss it with everybody in the same room. And I don't think that the value in that is ever going to go away.
I think another, and it's not related to COVID, but more so the Tampa project. We pushed a lot of technological limits, and there was an enormous amount of innovation that happened on this project, both from just the projection mapping point of view and pushing all of this real time content at the pixel density that we were doing that, to the just how do you get you know, multiple real time computers with, you know, high end GPUs in there, frame locked, running at 90 frames a second, and all of this sort of stuff. So there was a heck of a lot of innovation that happened that we can carry through into new projects. And what I do find interesting in some of the conversations that we're having with companies is, you know, just these types of experiences are ones that can be enjoyed by people that are standing, you know, 5-6 feet apart and shared immersive experiences. So I do think we'll actually see a bit more of this type of content, whether it's, you know, projected onto a table or outward onto the walls or something like that. These types of experiences, I think, we're going to see more of them.
All right, guys, thank you very much for your time. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but we try to keep it to half an hour, 35 minutes, and I'm sure we could have talked for 3 hours.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.